John Morosi, Paul Morosi, John Paul Morosi, J.P. Morosi, all of those people.
Gianni Paolo.
Gianni Paolo. Como sta? Okay. Bene?
Tutto va bene. Grazie mille. Sono qui in Pittsburgh.
What are you doing in Pittsburgh? Oh, you're in Pittsburgh for a baseball game.
I'm here in Pittsburgh, yes. I'm actually at a baseball game.
Oh, boy.
Great place to be, too. That's a great park, and that'll be a great scene tonight.
It will be. And I was here last year when the Cueto chant started, and it was certainly very much hockey-inspired. And, of course, it prompted Johnny Cueto of the Reds to drop the baseball. And then Russell Martin of Montreal, and a great Habs fan, he hit a home run on the very next pitch. So in the first of his two home runs in that game. So certainly there was a strong link there between Russell Martin, the hockey type chant, and a wild card game in Pittsburgh just 1 year ago. So here we are back again 1 year later.
Pirates host the Giants tonight in the National League wild card game. Let's get to that. We'll come back to that in just a couple of seconds. But we would be remiss if we didn't start with what was an extraordinarily entertaining baseball game last night. You know, I hesitate to put, you know, to try and rank baseball games that I've watched, and I didn't, I confess, I fell asleep a couple times.
It's only 5 hours long. What's wrong with you?
I know. but I'll tell you what, if I'd known, if somebody could have told me in advance, if Morosi had been on yesterday and said, don't fall asleep, this is going to be an epic, I'd have stayed awake for the whole damn thing. That was something last night, though, wasn't it?
It was. And to me, what makes it even better is that we have this digital record of the Barstool conversation of every Royals fan and even every neutral fan from early in the game, second-guessing Ned Yost, calling for his ouster when he put Yordano Ventura in the sixth inning after pulling James Shields, and it looked as though the entire game had disintegrated on the Royals, and then all of a sudden they come right back. So, for me, you know, I was just watching it like everybody else was, but it ranked right up there for me with game 163 in 2009 at the Metrodome, Tigers-Twins, mm-hmm. a classic,
yep.
same thing back and forth, and also game 6 in 2001 in St. Louis in the World Series. I realize it wasn't a World Series game, but it was that exciting. When you talk about baseball so rarely has those moments when the game is won and lost and won and lost back and forth multiple times in extra innings and late in a game like that. And those are the two other games I could think of that were in that same vein. And it was just sensational. It was a tremendous way for the sport to start the playoffs.
Now, there are two conversations that spin out of this one. You know, one is Ned Yost is an idiot, and an idiot can still win a playoff game, clearly. But the second one...
Managing doesn't matter.
That would be the corollary to that, right? Clearly managing doesn't matter because a chimp can manage to and win a game occasionally. But the other question is, Billy Beane's a genius. We all know that. They made a movie about him. They wrote a book about him. What's he going to do now? You know, he had a team. This team was running away at the deadline. They pushed their chips to the middle of the table and say, we're going to go. We're going to do this. We're going to get Lester. We're going to get Samardzija. We're going to win the World Series. You know, we've had trouble in the postseason. We're going to win the World Series. They go into a free fall. They end up clinging to this the playoffs, getting into the playoffs in game 162. They lose game 163. Lester's gone.
They lose a 7-3 lead in game 163.
Yeah, blow a game that they had under control three times at least. What do you do now? Do you blow this up if you're Billy Beane?
Well, Steve, that's a great question. And my colleague at Fox, Ken Rosenthal, already wrote about this today, saying there are some executives in the industry wondering that exact question and people thinking that, yes, Billy will consider moving Samardzija or perhaps even Josh Donaldson during the offseason. Because, as you pointed out, they're going to lose Lester. They're going to lose Hamill. They're probably not going to have Jared Parker and A.J. Griffin back at the start of the season. So there's all these things that are happening. Their roster, Jared Lawley, the shortstop, is a free agent as well. So you look at the dynamics of the American League West. The Mariners are getting better. The Rangers are going to be better next year. The Astros are probably going to be better next year. So it's going to be harder to make the playoffs out of that division next year. And as Ken pointed out, I think very astutely, Billy Beane almost never takes the passive approach of just letting things play out. He's almost always aggressive, one way or the other. So if he doesn't feel like he's got a team that can win the championship with minor adjustments within obviously what we all know is a limited budget, if they can't do that, then it may very well go the opposite direction. And in an offseason when everybody's talking about how much John Lester and James Shields are going to cost and Max Scherzer all of a sudden, 1 year of Savard at whatever his arbitration number is going to be becomes a very appealing option, and perhaps they're able to rebuild a little bit that way. So I think certainly all of us that follow the hot stove guys, we're going to have to watch Oakland very closely, because it will not surprise me at all, as Ken pointed out, if Samardzija and or Donaldson are ultimately moved this winter.
Because their prospect cupboard's a bit bare now, isn't it, JP?
Right. And obviously because they had to trade Addison Russell to get Samardzija. You're absolutely right. And of course, and the reason why on some level they traded Cespedes to get Lester is that their prospect stockpile in the upper minors was not really that appealing to Boston. So they had to trade that major league player. And that is obviously the root of many of these things, is that Cespedes' absence from that lineup really had an effect on the rest of the group. Until last night, Brandon Moss, his bat had gone quiet. Derek Norris had a bad second half. Coco Crisp, who really is the igniter of that offense, had a miserable second half, really because of injury, I think, in large part. But the bottom line was they did not score enough runs. And now all of a sudden, they're entering an offseason where, unless you can find a couple mashers to go with Donaldson, you may in fact decide to rebuild things. And the last point, certainly on Oakland's offense, that I want to make here on this is, remember last night, Adam Dunn did not get in the ballgame.
Mm-hmm.
And he had said previously, hinted strongly he's going to retire. And Susan Slusser of the San Francisco Chronicle said that at 1 in the morning, Central Time, he was in full uniform and still said he was going to retire, even though last night was his chance to end that streak of never playing in the playoffs after 2,000 major league games. He didn't get in, so he's going to perhaps retire with getting that close to playing in the playoffs and not doing it. It's staggering and heartbreaking to even say that.
How'd you like to be an A's fan this morning, eh? Like, that'd be a tough, because all of that stuff, you add everything together that you just said, well, JP, that's a tough, like, one.
It's being a Blue Jays fan on steroids.
It's worse, right?
Oh, it's worse. That's what I mean. It's worse. It's worse than that. I mean, there's a parallel there, but they managed to get in, and then had that happen.
Yeah, the getting in part was better than being a Blue Jays fan. The consequences of that game are worse.
Are worse. Now, the only good news was it was only 10 p.m. when the game ended in Oakland. It wasn't the middle of the night. let's go to the guys who actually won, the Royals. Sports is a monkey-see-monkey-do enterprise. It always has been. Teams win by playing a certain way, with a certain style, with a certain character, and everybody else in the league scratches their chin and goes, maybe we can do that. It's always been that way. Last night, the Royals ran Oakland out of the stadium in a time where the stolen base has sort of become less of an institutional object of the offense. Now, not exclusively. There's still guys out there that run, but there aren't as many as there once were. Could we see that come back just based on what we saw last night? Because it may not have been the reason the Kansas City Royals won, but boy, was it an impact item.
No question. And I will say this. Last night was, in many respects, a singular game. You had a lot of things lined up.
Gotcha.
One thing that happened, Oakland knew the Royals wanted to run, so they started Giovanni Soto, but of course Soto got hurt after two innings. They had to put in Derek Norris, who cannot throw. He is arguably the worst throwing everyday catcher in baseball, and Oakland tried to avoid having him play for that exact reason, but when Soto went out, they didn't have a choice. And so you had a weak-armed catcher going up against a team in Kansas City that not only runs well normally, but was able to put Terrence Gore on the roster because of this the kind of fluky nature of the wild card round, because you can reset your roster afterward.
Mm-hmm.
So probably in the next round, I'll be a little surprised if Terrence Gore can be on the roster, because he is exclusively a pinch runner. That is his function. So that there were a couple singular things. But all that being said, I am a big believer that stolen bases can change playoff series. And I think certainly when you get to this time of year, you want to carry that one guy. The Boston Red Sox would not have won the 2004 World Series if it were not for Dave Roberts filling that base with Mariano Rivera on the mound. So people know how important it is. And it's funny, to your point, Bob, that as baseball goes in this circular way and we kind of follow things all around, usually when people rotate away from a certain thing and kind of leave that base uncovered, so to speak, if they get all into the power thing and everything else, all of a sudden, wait a minute, now everybody doesn't have the base dealers. now that all of a sudden is the new inefficiency that people are undervaluing, and then that becomes the new thing that's in vogue. So, I mean, to me, stolen bases are certainly a key part of the playoffs, and it's the reason why the Kansas City Royals are playing out right now.
But I have a hard time, and it was great last night, it was a lot of fun, and the Royals are a great story, but I have a hard time seeing that team with a pop gun offense, with whatever the speed they have, and with James Shields presumably not available till Game 3 of the Division Series, I have a hard time seeing them going any further.
Well, that's an interesting point, because I think on one level, with the Angels, I'm a little bit concerned. Pay attention closely to the status of Matt Shoemaker, because he is the starting pitcher for the Angels that really held their staff together. I believe he had 16 wins this season as a rookie. He's right up there. He'll probably finish top three rookie of the year balloting. He had like an oblique intercostal, that sort of nebulous high muscle problem late in the season. Hasn't pitched for, I believe, like 10 days or a couple weeks. If he cannot come back and be what he was, then, to me at least, the starting pitching situation is almost a wash. Jared Weaver does not have huge stuff. DJ Wilson has looked a little bit weary towards the end here. So the Angels' rotation is not all that good. They have Hector Santiago, who's been good. But to me, the Royals' rotation, even with Shields not pitching until later in the series, has a chance to be just as good. They have, you know, Duffy is back. So the Royals, I think they're going to be able to pitch toe-to-toe, and we know how good and deep the Royals' bullpen is. I mean, they're going to be able to win these bullpen games. Of course, Ned Yost is going to have to maybe be a bit more aggressive in using Herrera earlier in the game. I hope he acknowledges the mistake he made last night. And for me, Stephen, all it takes for the Royals is, you never know, that RBI Sal Perez had last night, that walk-off, you know, he's always had a lot of hitting talent, but I think he's pressed a lot and swinging a lot of pitches outside the strike zone. You never know what that emotion of last night is going to do for those hitters. You win the biggest game in franchise history over the last 29 years. That might help them relax a little bit, and maybe they'll even have better at-bats against Weaver, who is a comfortable at-bat to begin with because he doesn't throw that hard. So
no, we'll look, see how things go. And you make a good case. I just, you know, the nibble thing, look, it worked last night. You know, that plus base running plus, you know, the God smiling on him last night.
Hey, overall, it worked for 163 games.
It did. But, you know, that's a very good Angels. That's, you know, that's a very good offensive team, you know, the Angels.
They are. And certainly Hamilton may come back. Albert is there. And I think the one thing that we're going to really be watching closely in this series as the ALDS gets underway tomorrow is here we have our first look at Mike Trout in the playoffs. And in the last year of Jeter, as we talk about, well, who's going to be that next fixture on our American and Canadian television sets every October night for the next generation? If it's going to be Mike Trout, this is about the time to start. Derek Jeter won a World Series in his first extended action back in '96 as a postseason player. So we'll see. I mean, if Trout, and again, it's a small sample size and everything else, but Derek Jeter is a legend because of what he did in October. And this is now Mike Trout's opportunity to make that really great first impression on everybody that's watching around the world. So this is a huge week for baseball, really, to see what Mike Trout does this week.
But you know what? But Mike Trout's the best player in baseball. You know, Derek Jeter that year was a great young player, but he was not the best player in baseball. This guy's the best player in the game, right? So it's a different kind of showcase, isn't it?
It is. And this is why it's going to be so fascinating, because remember who was the best player in baseball during that period in the 90s. It was Barry Bonds, who didn't really have a great postseason until he got to the Giants in 02 when nobody could get him out. So I think, you know, because those years in Pittsburgh, he really struggled. So that's why, again, it's a small sample size, and all of us, we're going to get caught up and people are talking about all the writers have their narratives and everything else. But look, this is when you have to do it. I mean, this is when the great athletes that we admire and talk about, regardless of the extenuating circumstances, how much experience they have, what's going on in the game, they get it done in the playoffs. And that's ultimately, when you talk about legacies, that's when they're written. And LeBron James, we saw that in basketball. We've seen it with how many athletes in hockey. And now it's time for Mike Trout to do the same in baseball.
Let's move to, in the next few minutes, to the Giants and Bucks. On the surface, you might think, well, the Giants probably are the better team, the more experienced team. They have world championships, etc. And all that is sort of true, except this is a Pittsburgh team that quietly emerged from the darkness last year to have one of these games, which they prevailed at home. who again quietly this year kind of fumbled around during the season, got hot in September and secured their spot.
And they have the best position player in the National League in McCutchen, right?
He's in that conversation at the very least. I don't know if he's the best, but he's certainly in that conversation. And as I tried to think about it, you know, usually you look and you say, all right, there's the favorite right there. And it's my old Vegas days, I guess, that put that in my mind. I talked myself into believing both teams should be favored in this from time to time over the course of the last 24 hours. Who do you like here?
Well, you know, I'm on record, Bob, as picking the Giants. But I think this is going to be a heck of a game. I mean, the thing about the Giants is, and we talked a little bit earlier about the atmosphere and the chanting and everything else, Madison Bumgarner pitches for San Francisco tonight. And I think he's going to be less rattled by anything that happens in the stands or the chants than just about any other pitcher in baseball. Because remember, Madison Bumgarner pitched 8 shutout innings in Arlington, Texas as a 21-year-old, effectively a rookie, in the 2010 World Series. So whatever happens here tonight, this is not the first time he's been on a big stage like this. So I think he's going to be fine. It's going to really be on, I think, Pittsburgh to sort of keep the fans involved early on with some offense like they did last year against the Reds. But as I said, it's going to be tough. Madison Bumgarner is that good. On the flip side, Edinson Volquez is a guy that he's only made one postseason start, so doesn't have that extensive experience, but he's really gotten into his comfort zone. The last 10 starts here, an ERA under 1.5. He's been magnificent. The Pirates really give a lot of credit to the pitching coach, Ray Searage, and their special assistants at the GM, Jim Benedict, really getting his mechanics in line. He's been a new man since coming to Pittsburgh this year. He was on the Dodgers last year in the playoffs and didn't even pitch. So he was a reliever at that point in time. So this is a tremendous turnaround for Volquez. And, you know, again, the starting pitching matchup definitely favors the Giants, but the Pirates have plenty of thunder up and down the lineup. And as you said, I would say, Stephen, I would agree with you, McCutchen, for me, best position player in the National League, and I get a sense he'll have something special tonight.
So you like the Giants. It would be you like the Giants previously. But I don't think
I have to stick with him. I'm already on record at FoxSports.com.
Oh, so now you're kind of. Oh, you're doing that game. Yeah, I get it.
I can't backtrack.
Sure, you can. You could change your mind. You could come to your senses.
I guess, but I feel you know, the Pirates, they're a very likable team. And one thing I want to make sure I point out to watch tonight, guys, is Clint Hurdle, the Pirates manager, has a very serious degenerative hip condition in his right hip that makes it extremely difficult for him to even walk. I talked to Jeff Bannister, the bench coach, said Clint really he's even has a hard time sitting down on the plane. Some come out of the dugout today, he was using his fungal bat as a cane. I mean, this is extremely painful. So watch during pitching changes. He's coming on and off the field. But it was a great story Travis Sawchuk wrote in the Pittsburgh Tribune Review today about how the players have really been really inspired by the way Hurdle has handled himself, but refused to have surgery. It's actually Rob Roth who wrote the article, but that it was the way that Hurdle has really inspired the room by not having surgery and he's catching up for the offseason and really kind of sticking with his guys every day. So a pretty cool thing that Hurdle's done. So watch that in the game tonight.
Real quickly, because we won't talk to you probably before the World's – well, yeah, we probably will. We'll talk to you
before the World Series. I hope so.
But you know what? The playoffs are just getting underway here. So give us your two World Series teams.
Washington Nationals over the Detroit Tigers, with former Tiger Doug Fister getting World Series MVP honors for beating his former team twice, because we love narratives like that. So Doug Fister is going to be the World Series MVP against the Tigers. The ALCS will be Tigers over Royals. I got the Royals beating the Angels, and the NLCS, Nationals over Cardinals. Dodgers out in the first round. It'll be complete chaos out there in L.A. and all kinds of pressure on Mattingly.
Why? Wait a second. Stan Kasten was on with us yesterday. He's screaming at his radio right now. Why do you think the Dodgers are making a quick exit? What don't
because
you like?
I am not confident in the health of Hunjin Ryu as the number 3 starter. They're going to have to try to pitch Kershaw in short rest again early in the playoffs, potentially. I have doubts about Brian Wilson in the 8th inning. And so the combination of the non-Kershaw Greinke starters having major questions and the non-Kenley Jansen and non-JP Howell relievers having serious questions, there's a lot of innings unaccounted for in that 5-game series against a very professional Cardinals team that knows how to win in October. The Cardinals beat them last year. They'll beat them this year as well. But the one thing that could possibly change that is if Puig or Kemp has a massive series. Those are the two guys to watch on the Dodgers side of things, because they've been the best hitters in terms of consistent right-handed power. And, of course, Adrian Gonzalez, that great run bruiser from the left side.
So, well, you've not only lost your name, you've lost your mind.
I got to ask one last thing, JP, before you go. So when the Tigers, the Tigers are in the World Series this time, are they gonna win a game in the series this? Because if I'm going to sit out of Comerica in, you know, freezing weather again, I'm not sure I want to sit through that again. But the last time was kind of depressing.
At least, you're right. I mean, they're 1-8. In this current, the Leland era to present, in the World Series. I think they'll find a way to win a ball game. I think they're a little bit of a more well-rounded team. But on the Tigers side, pay close attention. Rajay Davis is a huge player for that team. I know he doesn't get a whole lot of publicity. I know he was with the Jays for a number of years. He gives them a speed element that they lacked in recent postseason. But he's got this groin injury. It's a really tricky thing that he may not be able to play in the ALDS. So if he can't go, that is a substantial loss to the Tigers because they have to go to a very inexperienced Ezekiel Carrera or Don Kelly in center field. So stay tuned to that Rajay Davis injury report.
I lost track here. So it's you got the Tigers winning in the World Series?
No.
Winning the World, losing the World Series.
No, they're gonna,
but you got them going to the World
over
Series.
Over the Tigers.
All right.
Yes. But yeah. I assured Steven
that they would win
the
a game.
The Tigers will at least win a game. So yeah. I'm now on record as saying
the Nationals in five.
Even my hometown will at least produce a victory in the Fall Classic, yes.
Yeah, take this all with a grain of salt, folks, because this is the same moron that said, I think he predicted the Spartans would beat the Wolverines in the national championship game in January.
This is the same moron on this very radio station said Kings over Rangers in the Stanley Cup Finals before the playoffs even started in the spring, my friend.
Yeah, send me the
audio record of that happening.
Yeah, well, send me the tape, Morosi. I don't remember that at all.
It was on Brady Walker.
That's not relevant at all.
It's there. It's in the archives somewhere, I assure you.
All right. Yeah, well, you know, you're in the wrong business then. If you're that good, move to Vegas.
I think I am. I think I must
move to Vegas.
Let me know.
Make a lot more money, pal.
Sounds good. Enjoy the playoffs, guys. Thanks
you
for
too.
Having me on.
We'll talk to you soon.